Started yesterday, almost finished the Mishnah on Kuf Yud Beis Amud Beis, going on to Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. And the last part of the Mishnah addresses the issue, the question of the difference between what's called a Bamas Yochid and a Bamas Tzibur. There are three categories. There's a Bamas Yochid, which is otherwise called a Bama Ktana. There's a Bamas Tzibur, which is otherwise called a Bama Gdola, and then there's the Mishkan or the Migdash. Those are three separate categories. Each one has its own dinim. And the Mishnah addresses the question of the difference between a Bamas Yachid, which is a private Bama that I put up in my backyard during the time of Heter Bamos, as opposed to a Bamas Tzibur, which includes the following three historical situations. That's Gilgal during the first 14 years, and then Nov, and then finally Givon. Those three fit into the category of a Bamas Tzibur, and what's common to both of these categories, a Bamas Yochid and a Bamas Tzibur, or otherwise known as a Bama Ktana and a Bama Gdola, is that there's a heter bamos, a heter hakrova b'bamos, as opposed to the third category, which is mishkan or migdash, and that includes the mishkan in the midbar, it includes Shiloh for a long period of time, and it includes the base of migdash, the first and the second, that generates an isra hakrova b'bamos. But again, this mishnah that we're studying now doesn't address the issue of Mishkan and Migdash, but rather Bamas Yochid and Bamas Tzibur, or as we said before, Bama Ketan and Bama Gdola. And the Mishnah says, what are the differences between the two? Number one, in a Bamas Tzibur, which again, as we said, is Gilgal, Nov, and Givon, there's Smicha, which is that the Bailam is Somech Yodav al Rosh HaKarban before its Shechita, and a requirement of Shechitas Tzafon in the cases of Kodshei Kodshim. That's called Tzfon HaMizbeach. Now, what's Koveh? What's the Dovra Koveh? When is it called a Bamas Yochid? When is it called a Bamas Tzibur? When is it called a Mishkan or a Migdash? What's the criterion? What's the Dovra Koveh? So this is addressed by the Tosefta in the 13th Perek, and the Tosefta says the following. If a person structures his own personal mizbech anywhere on the face of the earth, that's called a Bama Ketana. However, if an Oel Moed is set up, that's called Oel Moed Natui. Now the question is, does it have an Aron or does it not have an Aron? So there's a Mizbeach that's been set up in an Oel Moed. If there's no Aron, then it's called a Bama Gedola. It's not called a Migdash or a Mishkan. And as we said before, it doesn't generate an Isur HaKrova B'Bamos. However, if the Oel Moed is Natui, and on top of that, there's not only a Mizbeach, but also an Aron Kavua. The Aron is set near, somewhere near the Mizbeach. That's called a Mishkan or a Migdash. So the periods of time, which are called Gilgal, Nov, and Givon, that's period of an Oel Moed Natui, but in the absence of the Aron. And during these periods of Nov and Givon, there was no Aron. And in the absence of the Aron, as we said, the Oel Moed does not have the status of a Mishkan. And therefore, there's a Heter HaKrova B'Bamos, and the Mizbeach in these places of Nov V'Givon is called a Bamas Tzibur. Now, Gilgal is a little bit challenging to understand. It doesn't seem to fit exactly into our pattern, our barometers, because Gilgal had not only an Oel Natui, but it also had the Aron Letzad HaMizbeach, and therefore it should have had a din of a Mishkan, which would have engendered an Isra HaKrova B'Bamos. And the answer lies in the Meiri, believe it or not, at the beginning of Masechta Megillah, And he says that during the period of Gilgal, the Aron was not kavua liyad hamizbeach. Why? Because the Aron at that point was taken out for the milchamos. The Gilgal overlaps with the period, the 14-year period after they entered, Yoshua crossed the Yarden and entered into the land, and they were preoccupied with settling the land, and the mizbeach was kavua, but the Aron would go out with them to the milchamos. Yafutsu mayonosecha, in other words, that would Yafutsu ayvecha v'yanusu misanecha mipanecha. So that's considered, if the Aron is not b'makom kavua al yad hamizbeach, that's considered ein shama Aron, and therefore during the period of Gilgal for those 14 years, there was a heter bamos, and the mizbeach was in Gilgal, the mizbeach hanechoshes of Moshe Rabbeinu, and it had a din of a bama gdolo or a bama sibur, which means that there was smicha, there was shchita b'tzofar in the case of kodshei kodshim. And here we start where we wanted to pick up from yesterday, Daf Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. And we mentioned at the end of the shiur yesterday that there is a halacha, or shall we call it a kium, called Matan Arba, Matan Shtaim Shein Arba, which we described in great detail yesterday. That applies to a Bamas Tzibur, and is totally absent in the case of a Bama Ketana. So if a person, again, sets up his own Mizbeach in his backyard, then he does a Zrika on the Mizbeach, but he doesn't do Shtei Matana Shein Arba. And now Rashi says the Mishnah is turning to the discussion about Menachos. And that's called Tnufa V'Hagosha. Now, the concept of Tnufa with regard to Menachos, as Rashi mentions here, is very, very problematic. But I'll get back to that in just a second. Let's just talk about the easy case. The easy case is Hagosha. There's a halacha in Mincha called Hagosha Lekeren Dromis Maravis. And that's noeg in a Bamas Tzibur, but it doesn't apply in a Bamas Yochid. Rabbi Yehuda says there's no such thing as a Karban Mincha, neither in the case of a Bamas Yochid, nor in the case of a Bamas Tzibur. He completely disagrees with the Tanakhama about the application of Menachos, the possibility of bringing Menachos in a Bamam, even if the Bamam is a Bamas Tzibur. Meaning, again, as we said before, Gilgal no Vegivon. So Rabbi Yehuda's principle is Ein Mevin Karban Mincha B'Bama, not even in a Bamas Tzibur. And Mincha has to wait for, well, in the Midbar Mishkan, and then subsequently in Eretz Yisrael, Shiloh, and the Beis HaMikdash of Shlomo HaMelech. But getting back to the Tanakhama Shita, there is a Karban Mincha in a Bamas Tzibur, in a Baba Gdola, in the Gilgal Novi Givon. However, that Karban Mincha is a little bit different than what I meant to say was that in the case of a Bama Ketana, there is no Mincha. Now, with regard to Mincha, we have the unique feature or kiyum called Hagosha, and that, according to Tanakhama, is noeg in the Menachos of a Bamas Tzibur, and has no application in a Bamas Yochid. And Tnufa. Now, Rashi says the Tnufa here is referring to Tnufas HaMenachos. And the problem is that basically there is no such thing as Tnufas HaMenachos. I mean, Tnufa is something that applies to Kachim Kalim, to Shlomim, Toda, others, but what Shaykh is here is that Tnufa to Menachos. What was Rashi mean over here? There were no Tnufa. Well, the truth is there were two Menachos that required Tnufa as exceptions to the rule, but they were completely excluded from a Bamas Yochid. So to say that we're talking about those two Menachos and the absence of Tnufa in those two Menachos is characteristic of a Bamas Yochid, that doesn't make any sense, because those two Menachos were not even brought in a Bamas Yochid. what are the two menachos that we have in mind? We have Minchas HaOmer. Now, Minchas HaOmer is a carbon chova, and it cannot be brought on a private bama. In fact, the only carbonos that are brought on a carbon adava are carbonos of neder v'nedava. They're optional, voluntary carbonos. The second category of a mincha that's subject to a kiyum tnufa is what's called minchas sota. Well, minchas sota is also completely inapplicable. It's completely excluded from a bomas yachid because minchas sota is a carbon chova shala yachid. I mean, minchas homer is a carbon chova shala tzibur, but minchas sota is a carbon chova shala yachid. And as we said before, in a bomas yachid, they were only makriv carbonos of neder and adava. So we're really not sure what Rashi has in mind when he speaks about tnufa of menachos, which is suspended in the case of a bamas yachid, according to Rashi, when there is no such thing as tnufa in menachos, with the exception of those two cases, which have no application to a bamas yachid. Now the Mishnah continues and gives us other details that apply to a bamas tzibur, but they don't have any application or any nihug in a bamas yachid. Number one is kiyun in a bamas tzibur require a kohen to be makiv the karbonos, but in a bamas yachid, even a zar is kosher lakrova, so there's no din of kiyun of kahuna, and memela there's no din of bigdei shares in a bamas yachid, but in a bamas tzibur we require kohen, and therefore we require bigdei kahuna. Now, the Tosefta says that even Nashim are Ksheros Lahakriv Bebomas Yochit. Now, I'm not sure that that's the only way of reading this Tosefta. The Tosefta speaks about a person who sets up his own Mizbeach in his backyard, as we said, and he's Makriv for Bnei Beso, which includes even the females, the nashim, and his bonos. The Yerushalmi in Masechta Megillah says that nashim psulos lahakriv b'bom, and I was wondering if perhaps we can reconcile that with the Tosefta. The Tosefta is only talking about bailus. You need, in order to be makriv a karbon on a bomas yachid, you need bailus on the boma. And the Tosefta wants to establish that a karbon that's brought on behalf of someone else, let's say, for example, I structure a bama in my private property, it's my personal bama, I own the bama, I can't be makriv for someone else who doesn't have bailus, he doesn't have shutfus in my bama, but in the case of Bnei Beso, the Tosefta says, I can be makriv on my bama on behalf of my Bnei Beso, whether they're males or females is irrelevant, because they're considered part of my bias, and they also have bailus over the bama. But it's possible that Tosefta would also agree, as far as the Avodas HaKarbon, the Maisa HaKrova, then a czar who's a male could do the hakrova, but nashim psulos lakrova. Again, this all comes back to the old question that we've discussed in the past, whether nashim have the same status as a czar, or there's a separate psul, a separate exclusion of nashim. The Mishnah goes on to say, klei shares. In other words, for the dam, for zrika, or for that matter, for menachos and nesachim, we need a klei shares in the Bama Gdola, in the Bamas Sibur, but we don't have anything parallel in a Bamas Yachid. There's no klisharis in a Bamas Yachid. The Brisker Rav in the Rambam says that in the case of Menachos and Nesachim, there was no Kiddush in a Bamas Yachid, but klisharis, it was only a Kiddush of Dibur Peh. And he goes on to say that it's quite possible that the Dibur Peh could only engender what's called a Kedushas Damim in the case of Menachos and Nesachim in a Karban Yoch, in a Bamas Yochid, but not Kedushas Haguf. Now, v'reach nichoach here in the Mishnah, that's a reference in the case of a mizbeach on a boma gdola, that we put the basar of the kodshim, the akhtar has to be done first and foremost, raw meat on the marocha, directly on the marocha. You cannot first take the meat and subject it to any sort of a tzli and then put it on the marocha. But in a bamas yachid, you can do that. You're permitted to do tzli, to roast the meat before the akhtara on the mizbeach, and that's mutar even lechatchila. Then the Mishnah says, mechitza ledamim. In a bama gedola, we set up a mechitza straight down the middle of the mizbeach, meaning the chut hasikra would separate from the damim that have to be sprinkled lamala on the top half of the mizbeach, as opposed to 99% of the karbonos where the zrika was below the chut hasikra. The one case that I know of that I can talk about where the zrika sadam was, well, actually it's not zrika, but called the mitzi adam, that was done lamala above the chut hasikra, the top half of the mizbeach, that's called olas ha'of. Now, in truth, when we get to Mishkan and Migdash, there are two karbonos that require zrika on the top half above the chut hasikra, and that's olas ha'of and chatas behema. But chatas behema is not mentioned in our Mishnah, and it's completely omitted. It's not relevant to this discussion because the Gemara establishes later on in Kuf Yud Zayin that they weren't makriv bichlal a chatos on a bama gedola. Chatos came into being only in a mishkan or in the Migdash. So therefore, our Mishnah must be referring to olas ha'of, which requires mitzui lamala michut hasikra in the case of a bamas tzibur and a bama gdola, like no vigivon and so forth. However, with regard to a bamas yachid, there's no difference whatsoever between zrikas adam lamala michut hasikra lamata. So in a bamas yachid, we would not set up a chut hasikra. It would be absolutely futile to separate to divide the mizbeach into two parts, because there's no difference between the top half and the second half. Now, when we talk about lemata, in the case of bamas sibur, excuse me, in a bamas gdola, we talk about lemata michut hasikra. Here we're talking about olas behema ushlamim. And that we'll see also in the Beis HaMikdash. We'll see also the Beis HaMikdash Asham V'chatas Ha'of. There also, in those cases, the Dam was Nizrak L'mata Michut HaSikrim. But in Obama, they weren't Makriv Chatos, nor Ashamos. That had to wait till the Beis HaMikdash. So that's not relevant to our Mishnah, which is discussing a Bomas Tzibur. And we have another difference between a bamas tzibur and a bamas yachid with regard to richutz yodayim v'raglayim, meaning that in the case of a bama gedola, otherwise a bamas tzibur, the same synonymous term, we require kahuna, there's also a requirement of richitzas yodayim v'raglayim before the avoda. So that is knowing in a bama gedola, but it doesn't have any relevance or bearing to a bamas yachid. I'm not exactly sure what the chiddush of the Mishnah here is in this case. Obviously, if you don't require a kohen, the mitzvah of big day kahuna, or the mitzvah of rechitzas yadayim v'raglayim, that's, or for that matter, the requirement of klishot, that's all relevant to kahuna. And since there's no special status of a kohen with regard to bamas yachid, I don't know why the Mishnah has to go into great detail, but the Mishnah wants to give us the whole list. Now at this point, to finish up the Mishnah wants to set up what is the common denominator between a bamas yachid and a bamas tzibur, and that's number one, pigul, nosar, number two, and number three, tameh. Pigul in the lashon of the Mishnah is called aval hazman, which means he had a machshava to eat or to be makdil liachar zman alamachar. Nosar, which means that there's a prohibition to eat from the Basar HaKorban that was left over, and he didn't eat it Tokzmano or Tome, the Iser of a person who's Tome, to be Makriv Korbanos, or to eat from the Korbanos, all those apply to Abamas Yachid as they do to Abamas Tzibur, Shavin Bazeu Bazeh. Which is really interesting when you think about it. We finally came up with something that corresponds to Kodshim in Abamas Yachid. It's almost as if you've lowered all the requirements in Abamas Yachid. You talk about a Zar, and you drop the requirement of smicha. There's no din of shechita b'tzafon. There's no din of the top of the mizbeach in zrika, the bottom of the mizbeach. There's no menachos, perhaps, or even if there are menachos, but it's without agosha. There's so many matan domim. We said is anywhere. Still no din of shtayim sheni arba. Once we've lowered the requirements to such a level in bamas yachid. And of course, there's no shechutei chutz. Okay, that's true, and even of bamas tzibur. But we've lowered the requirements of a bamas yochid to such a point that we wonder what are the requirements? What are the dinim that correspond to kodshim in the case of a bamas yochid? And here we have it: we have pigul, nosar, and tame, which means that you can generate even in a bamas yochid an iser in the cheft of the basar. An Isa Chamur, which is called Pigul, if you have a machshava of eating it Liachar Zman. Also the requirements of Zman, the limitations, restrictions of the allotment of time, as far as Achila, as far as Akhtar apply, even to a Karban Yachid, on a Bamas Yachid. And number two, therefore, if the Basar is left over beyond that allotted time, and you weren't mekayim the mitzvah achilas habasar or haktaras habasar, becomes nosar with an isra achil of nosar, and tameh, meaning that the carbon has the basic kedusha that generates an isra for a tameh to eat the basar. Or, for example, let's say the Zar himself is tameh and he wants to be makriv the carbon on a bama, he's not allowed to do so because he's tameh, and that, so to speak, upgrades the status of a korban on a bamas yachid to some sort of basic dinim of kedushas korban. In the note here, he quotes the Tosfos Yontif. His name was Heller. He lived, I think, about 4 centuries ago. Maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit. Anyway, he writes the Tosfos Yontif that b'derech klal, our Mishnah, when it mentions Tameh, the intention of the Mishnah is to a Tameh who's eating Basar Kodesh. However, the Tiferes Yisrael, another super commentary in the Mishnah, adds the case of the Basar becoming Tameh. So we have really two concepts here. Number one, the Iser of an Adam Tameh, and again, we're talking even Azar, to be Makriv of the Karban, to eat from the basar of the karban. That's all included here in the discussion of a bamas yachid. What's a little bit strange about this Mishnah, sort of like a glitch that has to be ironed out, is the fact that the Torah tells us that you have to shecht. Just 1 second. Okay, this kasha we'll wait for a little bit down the line. Now again, we've gotten so involved in the last part of the Mishnah that we may have forgotten what we discussed yesterday, the first part of the Mishnah. It's been a while. And that is with regard to Shechita, Sreifa Sapara, the Mishnah establishes that there's no Chiyuv of Chutz, and the Mishnah formulates it as Chutz Migita. Now, this concept of chutz migita, which is maybe the subject of Asugi in the Gemara, the word gita is not a biblical term. It doesn't appear in the Torah at all. The Torah says that the paraduma has to be shechted, has to be burnt, mul pesach ha-hechal. Doesn't say gat anywhere. The Chachamim made a takana that the sreifa of the parah should take place in the gat, and that's a lower place where the Afer or the Par will not disperse. And if he shechts it outside the Gat, let's assume it was Mula Pesach, what was the Havamina here that would be considered a Shechita Psula, and therefore you might wonder whether or not it's called chutz. I mean, the whole concept of psul, of chutz legat, which is only a takana de rabbanon, that it should be done in a gat so that the afer, as we said, doesn't spread out. And again, right now, we don't assume that he did the shechita shelo keneged Pesach Oel, shelo keneged Pesach Haichal, where he doesn't violate the Isur Shechitas chutz, because if that be the case, the Tana should have said explicitly that im shachat, instead of shalo, or chutz migita, should have said shachat shalo keneged Pesach, he's not chayef for chutz. So we're not really clear about the intention of the Mishnah when it says shachta chutz migita. In any event, the Gemara asks the following question: my chutz migita, which is this place where the Havamina was that is Vishechts the Paraduma outside of the Gita, I would think that he's Chayev Karis for Shechitas Chutz, and the Tana was compelled to tell me a Chiddush that he's not Chayev for Shechitas Chutz. And in a sense, what the Gemara is analyzing now is the Havamina here, that there could be a concept of Chutz in the case of Shechitas Paraduma. Amrei Shlakish, where did he do the Shechita that we thought it was Chutz? Is Chutz Mimakom HaBadukla. In other words, we're taught the lechatchila requirement here of paraduma is what's called haramishcha, which is mul pesach oel, and it's a place, a location where they were bodek to make sure that there was no possibility of tumah. Now, when we talk about tumah here in our sugya, now we're talking about what's called kever hatahom, which means that there might be a dead body, a corpse that was buried way, way, way down below the surface. And we have a principle with regard to Kever Tahom that Tuma Bokas Viola Adlerakia, that underneath, you know, from the spot underneath the ground where the corpse is buried, all the way up, straight up, vertically, up to the sky's the limit, as we'd say, it would be Metame, everything in its way. That's called Tumas Tahom. And Tahom means that it's covered up down at the bottom, and it's not Begolui, and now we have to worry about a suffix that maybe, you know, wherever we do the Shechita Sapara, or for that matter the Sreifa Sapara, maybe the Parag was contaminated by Tumas Tahom, because underneath, deep down on the bottom, under the ground, there's some kever of a mess. Now again, we could have solved this problem of Tumas Tahom with something called a Chalal Tefach, Al Tefach, Rum Tefach. You know, if there's a space between the mess and the surface level, you know, that's above ground, of a Tefach, that is Chotzeitz Bifnei Tumah. But in the absence of that Psicha, that Poseach Tefach, we have what's called Tumah Ritzutza, which is Bokas Viola Adlerakia. And the question is, does the Torah require, within the context of preparing the para, that we make a bedika, and we make sure that deep down below the surface here, there's no kever that's buried, there's no corpse that's buried? L'chora, it would seem poshut that on a Doraisa level at least, we don't have to be bodek, maybe underneath this place there's a kever. And the Shechitas HaPara is always considered kedasu kedin. The Torah doesn't set up any requirements or restrictions. Well, maybe there's a tumas tahom here, a kever shel tahom. We don't require bedika. And yet, Reish Lakish is telling me chutz mimakom abodukla, that if he took the para and he did the sreifa in a place where we didn't check below the surface, meaning we have to be choshish for the possibility of a kever tahom, is then the karba, the paradum would be possible? And the Mishnah says that if he does the shkit in that place, that you're not chayv from for shkut echutz, because even though the you possled it, the Parah Aduma, but nevertheless, it's not something that's omed, that's royally karev al gabi mizbeach. It's not royal Pesach al moed. So Tosus Dima Maskel Chutz mentions this question, and he says Kasavar Rish Lakish holds the boy Bedika, and he says V'chimid Doraisa. He says Tema. Is this a Doraisa requirement? The Torah is not going to be, you know, the Torah is Choshesh wherever you turn on every spot on the earth. Is maybe there's a Tumas Tahom, a Kever, and therefore you need Bedika. So Tosus says, what was the Havamina here of requiring Bedika? And he says that the Pasuk is telling me that we shouldn't be Soref the Para in a Makom Tame. We have to know for sure that the Makom where we burn the Para is Tahar. And Reish Lakish holds that we're going to need a Bedika. We'll soon see why there's a serious possibility of Tumas Tahom without a Bedika. Ever HaTahom. Now, this Makom, which was not checked, according to Reish Lakish, could at least be mechayev a shchitas chutz. Now the question is why? If the chisaron is that this makom is eno baduk, could that therefore set up shchute chutz? So again, the Mishnah says paras chata sheshachta chutz migita. And we're not going to say that since the Shechita was Chutz Migita and it wasn't Kedina the way he should have done it, therefore he should be Chayav for Shechitas Kodshim B'Chutz. And we're going to have to say that this is a Makom, according to Reish Lakish, where we consider the possibility of Tuma and apostles the Paraduma. The Havmina was that we should be Chayav for Shechitas Kodshim B'Chutz, because that Makom, It's an odd kind of concept, because we've been talking about Shchutei Chutz as outside of the Azorah. Here we're not talking about outside the Azorah, but it's considered outside of its Makom, because that Makom called Chutz Migita, insofar as it's excluded for the Shchitas Parah Aduma, it becomes Chutz. Amar lo Rabbi Yochanan l'Reish Lakish, halo kol Eretz Yisrael bedukehi. Why do you assume, Reish Lakish, that we need a Bedika to determine that this Makom in Eretz Yisrael is completely excluded from Tumas, it's clean, shall we say, of Tumas Tahom? Says Rabbi Yochanan, all of Eretz Yisrael is considered Beduka. We don't need a Bedika. It can't be that the Tanakhama of our Mishnah is talking about Shechita B'Makom Sheino Baduk. All of Eretz Yisrael is considered Baduk. Elam Rabbi Yochanan, what does the Tana mean when it says Chutz Migita? Kigon Sheshchata Lifnim Min Chomas Yerushalayim. He shechted the Parah inside Yerushalayim. The Pasuk tells us Votziosel Michutz LaMachne V'Shachat, that the Shechitas they take place outside the Machne, and in the Brice in Yuma we say that the Shechita of the Parah has to take place outside of three Machnos, which means outside of the Chomos Yerushalayim. And the Mishnah is telling us, according to Rabbi Yochanan, that if he shechted it lifnim in Achoma within Yerushalayim, he's not chayv mishum shkutei chutz. And here there's a long discussion in the Chofetz Chaim in Likutei Halachos, because the Gemara seems to imply that shechita chutz lechoma passels the paraduma. It's ma'akid. And the Chofetz Chaim develops a whole thesis here that there's a connection between Shechita of the Paraduma, Sreifa the Paraduma, and Hazah, you know, to sprinkle the concoction of Mechatos together with the Eifer Para. All this is connected. It's like a domino theory. And in Likutei Halachos, he says what was the Havami to Mechayev Shchutei Chutz for this Makom, which according to Rabbi Yochanan means inside the Chomus Yerushalayim. And he says that there was a possibility of arguing that just like if a person shechs kodesh b'chutz lazora, he's chayv kares, because he didn't shech the, in his makom aroy lahem, so too when he shechs the paraduma shalo b'mkoma, because the makom of shechitas paradum is chutz lechoma, and he shecht it inside the chomus Yerushalayim, he should be chayv kares midin shchutei chutz. And if he shechts the par shalo b'makom sreifasa, for example, if it's shalo keneged Pesach haheichal, even if he would shecht it inside the chomas Yerushalayim, the shechita would be psula. In other words, there's a requirement of shechita and sreifa nazo b'makom echad, and if he shechts the par shalo b'makom sreifasa, it becomes psula. Now, there's a Rambam in Paradum and Perek Dalet which seems to imply that if he shechts it lifnim min achoma, but it's mul Pesach haheichal, then the shechita is shechita kshera, and even if he does the sreifa na'azah in that place, as long as it's mul Pesach haheichal, we don't care that it's lifnim min achoma, the shechita is shechita kshera. We're going to have to reinterpret our sugya according to the Rambam. But be that as it may, the Brisa certainly says that in Yuma that the shechita of a parah should take place chutz migimel machnos, and we're trying to establish now that inside the chomus of Yerushalayim, that is called shalo b'mkoma. And if shalo b'mkoma, and it might even possibly the paraduma b'dieved, if we don't go with the Rambam, then he should be chayv for shechitas chutz, as we explained in the name of the Chofetz Chaim. That's the way Rabbi Yochanan understands it. Now the Gemara is bothered by the formulation of Rabbi Yochanan, because maybe he went a little too far, and we don't know why he had to mention that the Mishnah is addressing the case where the shechita was inside the Choma, inside Yerushalayim. The Lukma, why couldn't Rabbi Yochanan interpret our Mishnah as addressing the following scenario? And that is that he shechted in Achinami Chutz Lachoma outside of Yerushalayim, outside of the three machnas, as he was required to do so. However, Shalo Kenegeda Pesach. And the Kenegeda Pesach is an absolute requirement, as we'll soon see, based on a Hekesh. Because in the case of Hazah, the Torah requires Vehizal Nochach Pnei Ol Moed, and if we set up a Hekesh between Sreifas HaPara and Hazah, then just like Hazah requires Mul HaPesach, and if it was Shalom Mul HaPesach, it's possible. So too the Sreifa requires Mul HaPesach, and if it's not Mul HaPesach, it is possible. And the Gemara thinks that this would have been a less radical kind of interpretation of our Mishnah to say that Enochinami he shechted in Chutz Lachoma, which is the basic requirement of Shechita in Paraduma, but it was just lacking the Keneged HaPesach, which is low Keneged HaPesach. And Yenachayev, the Mishnah is telling you, for that Shechita of Shalom Keneged HaPesach, for Shechitas Chutz, because again, it's not Roy Li Karev Al Gabi Mizbeach. Now, this kasha of the Gemara is standing on the shoulders of a premise that Rabbi Yochanan accepts the principle that you have to shecht the parah mul Pesach Ha'echal, and if you don't do so, the shechita passes the parah duma. And how do we know such a thing? So first, we're going to quote Rav Ada Bar Ava. He's the one who tells us that Shchata Shalom Keneged HaPesach Psua. Again, the word Pesach here means Pesach HaHechal. And that's derived from the Pasuk Shenemar V'Shachat Osol Lefanov. And the very next Pasuk, this is in Parashas Chukah, the very next Pasuk says V'Lakach El Azar Koimi Dama Be'etzba'o V'Hizah El Nochach Pesach Ol Moed. From the Smichus here between Shechita and Hazor, Rav Adi Bar Rava says we derive the conclusion that the Hekesh of Shechita to Hazor tells us that Mahazor also can get up Pesach, because the Pasuk says explicitly V'hizal Nochach Pnei Ol Moed. So too Av Shechita also can get up Pesach. The Shechita also requires can get up Pesach. And again, we're going to assume that there's a Hekesh between not only Shechita and Hazor, but even Sreifa and Hazor, because the next pasuk mentions Visaraf, and that's conjoined to Vihizah. Visaraf is in pasuk Hey, in Perek Yates. I should remember this was my Bar Mitzvah parasha. And the Shechita is in Pasuk Hey, immediately afterwards. So based on the string of Hekeshim, we're going to derive the conclusion that just like Hazor requires Al Nochach Pnei Oel Moed, which means Keneged Pesach HaHechel, so too the Shechita and the Sreifa requires Keneged HaPesach. Now, the question is, does Rabbi Yochanan accept Rav Adi Bar Rava? V'chi Teiman, if you'll argue, de lo makish, maybe Rabbi Yochanan never accepted this Hekesh. Via Itmar, we have an explicit statement in the name of Rabbi Yochanan that he accepted this Hekesh. Because it says, with regard to Paraduma, that Shchata Shalo Keneged HaPesach Rabbi Yochanan Rav Psula, and that's based on V'shachat V'hizah, the Hekesh between Shechita and Hazor. And with regard to Sreifas Paraduma, we have again the statement of Rabbi Yochanan, Surafa Shalo Keneged HaPesach Rabbi Yochanan Rav Psula. In other words, the afer of this Sreifa cannot be used for Taras Hatmeim. It's completely possible. So we see that Rabbi Yochanan accepts the principle of Rav Adi Bar Rava, the requirement as a critical requirement of Keneged HaPesach, not only where it's explicit in the Torah and Hazor, but even in Shechita, and now we're seeing it even in Sreifa. Rav Oshi Omar Kshera. Rav Oshi is of the opinion that if he burns it, the paraduma shalok keneged ha-pesach ha-heichal, it's kshera, the afer can be used now for taras ha-tmeim. The Gemara explains the machlokas Rabbi Yochanan, Rav Psula, he has the hekish. Why? V'saraf es ha-parol einav. And the very first pasuk that precedes it says, V'izol nochach pnei oel moed. And we have a hekish between Sreifa and Hazor, that just like Hazor, Shalo Keneged HaPesach is Psula, so to the Sreifa, Shalo Keneged HaPesach is Psula. Rav Oshi Omar, Sreifa, Shalo Keneged HaPesach Kshera, Mishum Shenemar. In the next pasuk, it says, with regard to Sreifa Sapara, Al Pirsha Yisrof. And the question is, what does this word Pirsha mean? Rav Oshi wants to darshan the meaning of this pasuk, V'makom Sheporesh Es Lemisa. Now, it's the place where the paraduma dies, presumably as a result of the shechita. Again, the shechita doesn't completely kill the animal, so to speak. The animal is still what's called mefarcheses. And when that pirkus process of jumping around finally comes to its termination, the nefesh, the animal, dies. And shom tehei sreifasa, that's what the Torah means when it says that v'saraf Es haparole einov al pirsho yisrof. Now, where is the makom of pirsho lemisa? And that's where you need that. So we have to identify that place in order to understand where's the makom asreifa. And the answer is the Torah doesn't koveya in Hebrew the makom yitzias haneshama hanafsha. I shouldn't say neshama with regard to behemah, but nafsha, is therefore, if there's no kvius of a makom sheparashis lemisa, is ipso facto there's no kvius of a makom lisreifasa. But in any event, what comes out clearly that Rabbi Yochanan accepts the hekesh between sreifa and hazor, and if we go a step further and we assume a hekesh between shechita and hazor, then we get back to our question. If there's a critical requirement of Keneged HaPesach, why didn't Rabbi Yochanan interpret our Mishnah as referring to a case where he shechts the parah outside of three of three machnos chutz lechoma, but shalo can I get a Pesach? And before we read the Gemara's answer, I just want to add the following. With regard to Rav Oshia, it's possible that Rav Oshia would agree that the Shechita has to be Keneged HaPesach, that the Mokom of Shechita Sapor has to be Keneged HaPesach. However, the Yushalmi seems to assume that in the Mokom Shechita of the Par, that's where the Sreifa Sapar. So if we're going to say that according to Rav Oshia, the Mokom Shechita Sapar has to be Keneged HaPesach, then we should require that in Sreifa you require Keneged HaPesach, and that we see Rav Oshia rejects. Now that's all based on the Yushalmi and Trumas. It could be that our Sugya has a slightly variant understanding of Rav Oshia, and namely that Rav Oshia darshins a Pasuk that the Torah is makbid only with regard to Sreifa, that it be chutz l'machne. That's our sugya. It has to be chutz l'machne, but it doesn't have to be keneged HaPesach. So again, there is a logical possibility that Rav Oshia loosens the belt and the requirements, restrictions of Sreifa, whereas at the same time, and allowing the Sreifa to be anywhere outside of Yerushalayim. But as far as Shechita is concerned, even Rav Oshia might agree that you need Keneged HaPesach, based on the drasha of Rav Ada v'Shachat v'Hiza. So he accepts the Hekesh Rav Oshia between Shechita and Azah to require Keneged HaPesach, but he doesn't accept and validate a hekesh between Azah and Shechita, therefore the Shechita could be anywhere outside of Yerushalayim. Rashi doesn't seem to indicate that maybe Rav Oshia accepted the hekesh of a Shachat Vehiza, and you get the impression from Rashi that just like Rav Oshia rejected the Hekesh between Saraf and Hiza, Sreifa and Hazza, so too he rejected the Hekesh between Shachat and Vehiza. The only problem is that if you accept Rashi, why do we need a drosha? Right? Rav Oshia suggests a drosha here, Alpirsha Yisrof. Why do we need that drosha of Alpirsha Yisrof to be Maksha Sreifa B'chol Mokom? If you assume that Rav Oshia never accepted the Hekesh between Shechita and Azah, so what would be the Havamina to say that Sreifa requires Keneged HaPesach? You know, Sreifa is the culmination of Shechita. And if there's no requirement of Keneged HaPesach in Shechita, then why would we even have a Havamina to require Keneged HaPesach in Sreifa? I mean, the Torah never indicates that the Sreifa has to be Keneged HaPesach. So why does he need this Gansa Drosha of Al Pirsha Yisrof? Again, it would make more sense to justify why Rav Oshia needs that Drosha if we assume that Rav Oshia never argued with regard to Shechita, and he accepted the Hekesh between Shechita and Azah, requiring, as it were, Keneged HaPesach and Shechita, and therefore we have a Havmin to extend it to Sreifa, because Sreifa, as we said before, is the final process after Shechita. Maybe Sreifa also requires Keneged HaPesach, and therefore he needs the drasha of Al Pirsha Yisrof. So again, we're stuck here, just to reiterate with the Kasha, why Rabbi Yochanan had to go so far and interpret our Mishnah as referring to a case where he shechted the Parah inside the Chomos Yerushalayim. Amri, so Gemara answers, lo mi boi ka'amar. In other words, there's an additional chiddush that Rabbi Yochanan wants to derive here, la halacha, by interpreting the Mishnah the way he does. In other words, according to Rabbi Yochanan's understanding of the Mishnah, when the Mishnah says that if he shechts it bifnim min achoma, then the shechita is psula, and he's not chayv for chutz, because he went inside the Chomos Yerushalayim, that's an extra chiddush. Lo mi boy, you know, it's ain't tzarich lomar, I don't have to tell you. that if he shechts it chutz lechoma outside of Yerushalayim, but shelo keneged haPesach, that for sure is possible. Derechukei rachaka, he was marchik the shechitas hapara far, far away from the Mokom Mekudosh, which means Yerushalayim, and there's no salvation of keneged haPesach, so he's doing it somewhere outside Yerushalayim, very far away from Kedusha, from Mokom Kadosh, and he doesn't have keneged haPesach. Is that's upgrade? That for sure is a shechita psula. The Mishnah wants to be mechadesh. Again, it seems like this is an aga of urcha kamashmalon that elafilu lifnim and achoma de kruve karva, that even though he shechted the paraduma inside Yerushalayim, he's being makarev. He's bringing the paraduma to closer to a place that's makudash. The ematis kasha, maybe somebody would entertain the thought that in this case the shechita should be a shechita kshera, because Adarav is coming closer to a makom kadosh. It's kamash malon. The Tana wants to tell us that even in a place which is more sanctified, so to speak, because it's in Yerushalayim, is nevertheless the shechita is a shechita psula, because the makom for the shechita of paraduma is chutz l'shalosh machnas outside Yerushalayim, and the Mishnah wants to tell us, don't tell me that he's being makarivit. And it comes out, and this is very odd, I think this is what the Rashash is bothered by, so it's not my own original kasha, that Rabbi Yochanan derives from our Mishnah an additional chiddush in Hilchas Paraduma. Now our Mishnah is here in Masechta Zvachim, and it's addressing the issue of chutz. There's, you know, there doesn't seem to be any additional chiddush of chutz in the case, again, we're talking about shechita chutz legita, in a case where he's in Yerushalayim, that's where he did the shechita, as opposed to outside Yerushalayim, shelo keneged haPesach. On the contrary, maybe there's more of a chiddush if he shechts it chutz lechoma, outside of Yerushalayim, where he's being marchiked farther and farther away from the Pesach HaHechal, right? Again, you know, you're talking about the Gemara's Kashia of Chutz Lechoma, but not Keneged HaPesach. That's even further away, and that would even be more of a Chutz kind of concept. So in Hilchas Chutz, if you want to be Mechadish that there is no Psul and a Chi of Karis of Chutz, you might as well take up the case of Shechting it outside of Yerushalayim, Shelo Keneged Pesach HaHechal, and tell me that, even though it smacks of and a reach of chutz, nevertheless there's no chutz here because it wasn't roy on the to be brought on the mizbeach, as opposed to the case where it's inside Yerushalayim, that's not really so much chutz, because the classical paradigm case of chutz is chutz li'azorah. Here, if it's in Yerushalayim, you're getting closer, and is less of a reason that compels me to call it chutz. But if it's outside of Yerushalayim, that's like outside the azor in the case of zvachim, and therefore I might think that it's chutz. That's the Rashash's kash. Meaning that it's odd that according to the Maskonas HaSugya, Rabbi Yochanan is telling me a chiddush in Hilchas Paraduma, when had he picked up had he interpreted the Braisa, the Mishnah, as referring to a scenario of chutz l'Yerushalayim, that would have been a greater chiddush in Hilchas Chutz, which is the subject matter of our Mishnah. That's the Rashash's problem. Now the Gemara wants to explain the machlokas between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan with regard to Eretz Yisrael. Omar Mar, what we had earlier was that Omar lo Rabbi Yochanan lo Reish Lakish, how can you interpret the Mishnah that Chutz Legita is referring to a place in Eretz Yisrael where they shechted the parah and it wasn't Baduk La, Valo kol Eretz Yisrael Bedukahi? Now the Gemara wants to explain, what are they arguing about? What is the Yisoda Machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, whether Eretz Yisrael is Beduka or it's not Beduka? B'maika Miflugi. Reish Lakish holds Mar, Sovar, Yorad, Mabel, Eretz Yisrael. So the Mabel impacted on Eretz Yisrael, and all the people in that area of Eretz Yisrael died, and their bones might have possibly been buried below the Adoma. No one was involved in the burial. It's not like the miraculous supernatural event of Haruge Beitar. So now there's a principle called Tumas Mesim Bokas Viola in the case of Tuma Ritzutza. Umar Sover, but Rabbi Yochanan's of the opinion, Lo Yorad Mabel B'Eretz Yisrael, that the Mabel affected the entire earth, Chutz, with the exception of Eretz Yisrael. Now, these Atzamos of the dead of the Mabel, according to Reish Lakish, which were found even in Eretz Yisrael, that's a little bit problematic in terms of Tumah. As Rashi, Divrei HaMaskil V'Tachteim, he quotes the Gemara Masechet Nazir, that Tumah Ritzutza, in other words, if there's nothing above the corpse called a Halal Tefach, is Bokas Viola and the Rekia, and therefore if somebody is Mahil, right, Tumas mess is contracted with Tumas oil. If somebody is on top of the mess or the Mokoma mess, so therefore if deep down inside below the surface of the ground there's a mess that's kavur and there's no halal tefach, then he's going to be, if he walks on that spot, he's going to be nitma betumas ohel. But this is really problematic because the tuma of ohel was established at Matan Torah and there's no tumas ohel before Matan Torah. So how could Rashi quote this Gemara in Nazir in terms of tuma ritzutza and therefore say that Ma'il ala Mokom is therefore, it contracts Tumas Mess through Tumas Oel? How can you say such a thing? There's no such thing as Tumas Oel before Matan Torah. And the truth is that the Gemara in Masechet Bava Basra, which Tosus quotes, has a ribui that Tumas Maga applies and not Tumas Oel. If there's no Tumas Oel before Matan Torah, that's Kodem HaDibur, so why is Reish Lakish worried about Meisei Mabul? And they quote the Brisker Rav, who in turn quotes the Gaon, the Vilna Gaon, the Gra in Aderes Aliyot, that writes that even a mess before the Dibur is Metame Biol for a different reason, not because of Tumas Oel, but rather what's called Tuma Ritzutza, right? When there's no separation between the corpse and an empty space of Halal Tefach and the person above, because in such a case, that's called Tumas Maga B'meis Atzmo. In other words, the categorization here of Tuma Ritzutza is not Ohel, not Tumas Ohel, but rather Tumas Maga, meaning it's as if he touches the mess itself, and that's a result of Tumah Ritzutza. And Tumas Maga applies even before Matan Torah. And that's what Reish Lakish is worried about if the place wasn't Baduk, because even Eretz Yisrael was affected by the Mabul, and there are tzomos of dead bodies that are deep down in the ground in a Tumah Ritzutza situation where the Tumah is Bokas Viola Larakia, we have to check the spot. But Rabbi Yochanan says Lo Yorat, that the Mabul did not fall on Eretz Yisrael. This, despite the fact, as Tosfos Divrei Maskil Lo points out, the pasuk says in Bereishis Perek Zayin Vayechasu Kol Ahorim Agvoim Asher Tachas Kol Hashamayim. Sounds like even Eretz Yisrael is included. But in every event, Rabbi Yochanan says no, that there was no Mabul in Eretz Yisrael. It's interesting because there are many statements in Chazal about the Avira, the Eretz Yisrael, and the Sfarno back in Bereishis says that the reason why Avira, the Eretz Yisrael, is so unique is because the Mabul didn't pollute and corrupt the atmosphere of Eretz Yisrael. And that's interesting because he's assuming that the Avira, the Eretz Yisrael, in potential, should have applied to the entire globe. Those special properties of the Avir of Eretz Yisrael really are not limited to Eretz Yisrael. The only problem is there was a Mabul everywhere but Eretz Yisrael, and that Mabul corrupted the special Avir, that pristine and lofty Avir of creation, so to speak. Omar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, the Gemara now is going to offer two approaches to explain this machlokas. What are they arguing about? According to Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, they're arguing about a pasuk in Yechezkel HaNovi, Shnei Mikra Echad Darshu, two interpretations or two readings, if you will, of one single pasuk, when Yechezkel gives tochacha on Tavos Yerushalayim in Perkov Beis, and we have a haftorah which we try to avoid if we can, because ain't darshim b'toevas Yerushalayim, a tov of achrimos kedosh. He says the following: Ben Adam emar la, speak to Eretz Yisrael, at you, the land of Israel, are Eretz lo mitohara. Now that's the key. I don't know. That's what Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan are going to be. I don't know how to interpret Eretz lo mitohara. Lo gimusha, lo gishuma v'yom zam. So certainly the end of the pasuk indicates we're talking about the mabul. Is Rabbi Yochanan Savar, he wants to read it not benichusa but beloshen tmiya, as a rhetorical question. Atmue mitami kro, the Novi is asking and saying, Eretz Yisrael, isn't it true, could it be true that lo mitohara at? That you have a certain tumor? That's not true. Klum yardu alayah kisham v'yom zam. There was no yiridus kisham of the mabul at the day in Eretz Yisrael, at the day of the mabul. So how could you become an Eretz Tmeya Tumas Hashem? And the pasuk is referring to Yerushalayim, Tumas Hashem Rabba Mahuma, Rabbas Mahuma. And this is the very sharp, harsh criticism of Yechezkel HaNovi ripping it in, that Yerushalayim and Eretz Yisrael became lo mitohara. And why is that so? You can't blame it on the mabul, because the mabul didn't fall there in Eretz Yisrael. It must be because of your sins. That's called Tovos Yerushalayim. Reish Lakish Savar, he reads the pasuk kipshuto, meaning benichusa, not as a question, a rhetorical question, but as a continuation of what the pasuk says, Tmeas Hashem, Rabbos Mahuma. And what the Cheskel is saying is, Eretz lo mitohara at. And now the second part of the pasuk says, V'loshon Tmiya, because lo yardu alayich gishomim v'yom zam, certainly, you have to admit that on that day of the Mabul affected, impacted even Eretz Yisrael. And therefore the Eretz is lo mitohara, because the Mesim were shaku ba'adama, they were buried deep down below the surface of the ground. In any event, we see, according to Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, that the machlokas between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish revolves around how to read this pasuk in Yechezkel. And this, the differences between the two readings really are twofold. Meaning, according to Rabbi Yochanan, the resha of the pasuk is a tmiya, and the seifa of the pasuk is b'loshen nichusa, because klum yardu alayach gishamim. You didn't have gishamim. That's Rabbi Yochanan. Reish Lakish says the opposite, that the beginning of the pasuk, Eretz lo mitohara at, that we read b'nichusa as a statement, and the rest of the pasuk, the sefer of the pasuk, is read b'loshen tmiya as a rhetorical question: Mi lo yardu olav gishomim v'yom zam. Esvei Reish Lakish asks Rabbi Yochanan, based on a Mishnah Masechta Parah, and the Mishnah is talking about the process of milui mayim chayin. In other words, we have the efer of the parah, dum after the sreif of the parah. Now we have to add to this efer, we have to add Mayim Chayim, but we have to guarantee that Mayim Chayim is not Chashom Tmeim. Tseiros Hayu B'Yerushalayim, this is an amazing, just an amazing Mishnah, that there were certain areas in Yerushalayim, it's called Chatseros, that were bnuyos. Now these chatzeros apparently were like habitats, they were domiciles where you could live, and they were built on a cella. Now what's unique about this cella? We're not talking stam about a stone, but we're talking about a large stone, a boulder of humongous proportions, and tachtehem cholul. Now, what we're trying to avoid here is tumah. And as we said, tumah ritzutza is bokeh ad l'rakia. So if we want to avoid tumah ritzutza, what we have to have is a halal pesach. So they set it up that inside the cella, down at the bottom, it would be chol. In other words, it would have a tefach al tefach. Mipnei kever tahom. And therefore, even if there is a mess that's buried deep down below the surface of the ground, the tumah would stop at the halal tefach. It would not be bokeh, it would not pierce above. And it wouldn't be ole tumat larakia. Okay, fine. So we've now guaranteed that we have these chatzeros which are built on a sela. There's a halal tefach, and therefore there's no problem of tumah ritzutza. Now what happens? Mevi'im noshim u'baros v'yoldos u'magadlos sham. The women who are pregnant now will set themselves up on these chatzeros. They will give birth on the chatzeros. And megadlos sham is b'neihem. And these children, these young babies, will be completely tahorim. And therefore, they can do whatever's necessary for the para. Again, we're talking about young children, so they can't do too much for the para. But what they could do is what's called she'iva samayim, because we need mayim tahorim to add to the mechatos, to the efer para, in order to generate this concoction called mechatos for tara. And the Gemara Masechta Gittin brings that there are Tanoim who hold what's called Ol Zoruk Lav Shmei Oel. Now, before we get to that, let's just mention that there's a Tosus here, Dibra Maschil Mevim, and he asks the following question: if they're trying to avoid Tumah, well, what about the Tumas Nida of the mother? I mean, she has contact with the baby, with the fetus after it's born. And Tosa says, Lo yuchoshin ela l'shomram mitumas mes. I think here you have to add the word chamura. Deboy hazo mituma yotzeis migufo kigon balkeri. No, it's tumas nida, it's not considered a tuma chamura. And they weren't going to take care of that. But what they had to take care of was a tuma chamura like tumas mes, or tumah yotzis migufa, that's also a tumah chamura, like balkeri. And this they would take care of by this whole process of chatzeros bnuyos al asela, and the noshim ubaros yoldos megadlashon. Now, we mentioned that... Well, actually, we didn't read this part of the Mishnah, so let's read this part of the Mishnah. Mevi'im shvarim v'al gabeim delosos v'sinokos yoshven aleihem. Now, the next part of the process of this whole story is to bring the children over to the Meishiloch to draw the water. Again, let's assume they're about 7-8 years old. They're mature enough to be able to do this, and we sit them down on top of the shore that's going to transport them over to the Meishiloach for the purpose of Milui Mayim Chaim. And now we sit them on top of Delosos. Now the purpose of these Delosos is to set up a Hefseg separating between the Tinokos and the Karka. And this has to do with the sugya in Gittin that I mentioned earlier called Oel Zoruk, which is an Oel that's in motion. Now, an Oel is usually chotzeitz between the tumah that's underneath it and that which is on top of it. But that only applies if the Oel is an Oel kavua. But if the oel is an oel hametaltel, that means it moves from place to place, it's not considered an oel to generate a chatzitza b'fnei atumah. And therefore, we have a problem here, because if we want to assume that the reason why they want, as these little babes are being brought to the Meshilach, there's no problem of tumah, is because the Oel is going to be chotzeitz, but we have here an Oel hametaltel, and an Oel hametaltel is not chotzeitz. So therefore, we have to understand exactly what we gain here by sitting down the children, the babies, on dalsos. Because we want these dalsos to serve as an ohel and to be mafsikos between the tinokos and the karka, such that even if by passing through this area from those chatzeres over to the Meshiloach, they're going to pass over Kvarim on the way to Milui Mayim B'Kiddush, the tumah will be interrupted by these dalsos, which serve as an ohel, so that the tinokos who are above the dalsos did not contract tumah, because the ohel, the dalsos which serve as an ohel, are chotzeitz b'fnei tumah. The only problem is that we're dealing with, according to many Tanoim, the principle of ohel zorek lav shmei ohel, which means an ohel metaltel is not considered an ohel hametzachotzeitz. So therefore we don't gain anything by sitting down the tinokos onto these dalsos, because since it's all in the process of tiltel, of moving, so then there's no principle here that could operate of ein chotzin, that there would be a chatzitza b'fnei atum, but on the other hand, ein chotz b'fnei atum, if insofar as this oil is an oil amitaltil. So if you look at Tosus Dibra Maschel vi al gabeim, Tosus says that we have to accept, according to this opinion of oil zorek lav shmei oil, the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda in Masechta Sukkah, that they didn't put the tinokos on the dalsos, but rather on the shvarim. The shvarim have a wide kresam rechava, and the shvarim themselves could serve as a chatzitza, as an oel. But the only problem is the shvarim themselves is also an oel zoruk, which is not an oel. But nevertheless, the Gemara derives from a pasuk of the Lashon Tzchacha that Atzomos and Gidin, that as far as Ol Zorik is concerned, the Shar still has a Shem Oel because of its Atzomos and Gidin, despite the fact that it's an Ol Zorik and it's Metaltel. But be that as it may, the Mishnah in Parah continues by telling us that Koso Shel Even Hayu B'Yadon, that What were the instruments, the vessels that were used to draw the water from the Shiloach? They were made of stone. Stone is not makabel tumah. And when these tinokos were able to dip the even, the kosos shel even, in their hands into the Shiloach, milu mayim chayim, they were able to fill up these kosos with water. And since a kli evan, a kosher evan, is not makabel tuma, the water remains mayim chayim tahorim, v'yashvu bimkoman. And we'll see what yashvu bimkoman means. In any event, the whole brisa, and this is Reish Lakish's point, is predicated on the assumption that we have to avoid tuma. And here we're talking about Yerushalayim. So we have a hochacha gemura here that in Yerushalayim there was a chashash for kever tahom, not like Rabbi Yochanan, who says that in Eretz Yisrael it's all beduka. Let's mention that Tosus Dira Maskel Umilu, which is almost at the bottom of the Amud, raises the question, what good is this whole process of being careful about the tinokos, that they shouldn't contract tumah? At the end of the day, you need an ish gadol who puts the afer into the mayim and makes the concoction. He needs a gadol to be mazeh me'apora on the tumah. And how do we know that this gadol wasn't mitame b'tumas tahom? In Masechta Sukkah, Tosfos gives the answer that they did whatever they could do, the maximum. Whatever takana they could do, as far as Tara Sapar is concerned, that's what they were masakin. And Yochinam, they couldn't make these takanas as far as these gadol are concerned. Maybe he was Tomei Tumas Keri or whatever it might be, Tumas Tom. But at least as far as the Tinokos, they made a statement, we're going to do the maximum, stretch ourselves out to guarantee the Tahara as far as taking the Mayim from the Meshiloch through these Klieven, through these Tinokos, and guaranteeing that the Mayim was Mayim Tahor. And now, how does Rabbi Yochanan interpret this Mishnah in light of the fact that Rabbi Yochanan holds that in Eretz Yisrael it's all Beduka, there's no Chashash of Tuma? Amar Rav Huna Berei de Rav Yoshua, Mala Osu Bekapar. Enochinami. As a universal rule, the Torah would not require that we'd be Choshesh for Tumas Tahom. And this entire Takana is all Midrabanan, which is called Mala Osu Bekapar. Now, you might ask, why did they do this Maila Bekapara? Why are they being so careful above and beyond the letter of the law? And the answer is because the Chachomim made a Takana to be Metame the Kohen, deliberately be Metame the Kohen who's involved in the Para. Let's say, for example, the Kohen Asorif is a Para. Why did they make such an odd, counterintuitive takana to be mitame, deliberately be mitame the Kohen? That's because they wanted to be matbil him before Harif Shemesh, before sunset, and he would have the status of a tful yom. We'll see in a minute why they made that takana, but they now have to counterbalance this. On the right side, they're making this takana that the Kohen Osik Bapara is Dafka Tful Yom. He's Tomei. Again, not really Tomei, he's only a Tful Yom, but nevertheless he has some some vestige of Tumah. Therefore, they had to be Machmir on the other side of the equation, so the people wouldn't be Mezalzel Bataras Paraduma. They made extra milos and requirements and strictures that go beyond the letter of the law. And therefore they were choshesh in the context of this special chumra maila osu b'kapara for tumas tahom. But mikra din, there's no chashash for tumas tahom. Now, why did the Chachamim institute this very strange requirement of being metame the kohen osik b'kapara with the status of a tful yom? And the answer is that has to do with the tztukim. And the tztukim believed that a Kohen has to be completely tar, even li'acharher, and requiring li'acharher of Shemesh, and it's only after Tzeis HaKochavim, in order to be involved in the Paraduma. And they derived this from their interpretation of the Pasuk V'yasaf Ish Tahar, meaning that Tahar is got to be after Harif Shemesh. And when the Pasuk says, Vayikrachov Beis Uba HaShemesh V'Taher, the Tztukim interpreted to mean that we have to talk about after Tzeis HaKochavim, after Harif Shemesh. Otherwise, he's a Tful Yom and he can't be involved in the preparation of the Paraduma. The Chachamim, what we call the Prushim, they understood that the word Tahar, which is mentioned here in the Parasha Paraduma, means Tahar Lachilas Maaseh, which includes a Tful Yom. So that's how they were Makabal it, based on Torah Shebal Peh. And we're talking about a Tful Yom before Harif Shemesh. And there were many takanas. We know this in terms of the Omer and so forth. But here, in this case of being, of making a takana to Lahotzi Miliban Shal Tztukim, then therefore they were Dafka Metame the Kohen Haosek Bepara with the status of a Tful Yom Lahotzi Miliban Shal Tztukim. On the other hand, they had to sort of go overboard on the other side of the equation in order to guarantee that there was no zilzul and they were therefore zilzul in tumah, and they were machmir even more than the Torah required. So if you're talking about on a deraisa level what's called Eretz Yisrael, what's the status of Eretz Yisrael, it's a makom tar and it doesn't require bedika. There's a special mila in para, but that's me'al me'eva, that's beyond the letter of the law. Reish Lakish also agrees that there were milos miyuchados that they did in Parah, but he holds that if the Mabul never had fallen in Eretz Yisrael, like Rabbi Yochanan insists, there wouldn't have been any place, any logical justification for this particular milah of being choshesh for a kever tohom. That's what Tosus points out at the end of the daf. Now Rabbi Yochanan asks the kashim Reish Lakish from a brisa. Eisve Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. Now this brisa could go either way. It could either be a raya for Rabbi Yochanan or a faker to raya for Reish Lakish. We'll soon see how the sugya develops this brisa. The brisa says Pam Echad. An occasion took place. Motsu Atsomos. They found the bones of a dead body, belishkas deer. This is called the lishkas deer ha'etzim, which is one of the lishkos in the Beis HaMikdash. And obviously this made a whole tire rum. This was a place where this lishka was a place that was designated for bedikas etzim l'marocha, to make sure that there were no toloim that would passel the etzim for the mizbeach, for the marocha. And because of this whole tararam, bikshu ligzar tumal Yushalayim, they wanted to assume that all of Yushalayim, if there's one dead body, then there must be many dead bodies that were not buried in Yushalayim. And therefore we require bedikah in the entire city of Yushalayim because of a chashash that maybe there are atzomos of a dead body, just like that we found them in the lishkas dir ha'itzim, and maybe there are, in the rest of the city, there are also dead bodies. But Omad Rabbi Yeshua al Raglov, the Tata Rabbi Yeshua stood up on his feet, V'yomani declared, V'chi lo busho chlimahi lonu shenigzar tumal ira vosenu. We were never choshesh for tum until this moment in time. Now we're going to make a gzera for the era of Avos. I'm not sure if Avos here means Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, or Avos refers here to Shlomo, to David and Shlomo. I'm not sure. But in any event, the era of Avos, now we're going to be metame, we're going to require bedika. And to dramatize his point, Rabbi Yeshua says, Aye meisei mabul, aye meisei nevuchadnetzar. Do we have to concern ourselves with all those who perished in the Mabul, and their bones, their remains are somewhere deep below the earth of Eretz Yisrael? Or, for example, those many thousands of Jews who were killed Nebuch at the hands of Nebuchadnezzar? Should we worry about Tumah? I mean, there was never such a gzeir of Tumah. Obviously, that this suffix is not really a suffix. And therefore, even now that we find the atzomos in a lishkas dir ha'etzim, we're not going to establish a tumah and be metame the balance of the city misafek. Says Rabbi Yochanan, minikomar hachi, since Rabbi Yeshua says that we were never choshesh for meisei mabul, lav lameimer, shouldn't we interpret that as saying dilo hava, that there were no meisei mabul, meaning that the mabul never fell on Eretz Yisrael? Again, you could easily see how this brisa might be a support for Reish Lakish, because they didn't institute such a gzera to be metame Eretz Yisrael or Yerushalayim, but nevertheless they were choshesh for the mabul. Aye meisei mabul. I mean, the language of aye meisei mabul implies that there were meisei mabul. But in any event, right now, Rabbi Yochanan is saying that lo hava, that there were no meisei mabul. That's what aye meisei mabul means. So Reish Lakish now asks Akasha on Rabbi Yochanan, make the way you're interpreting this brisa, how are you going to understand why they weren't choshesh faruge Nevuchadnezzar? Are you going to tell me that Hachinami Lohavi, that there were no people killed by Nevuchadnezzar in Eretz Yisrael? That's certainly not true. History bears out that we lost many of our children at the hands of Nebuchadnezzar. So what's the equation here that Rabbi Yeshua makes between Meisei Mabul and Meisei Nebuchadnezzar? Ela Havu Upaninhu. But rather we're going to say that although there were many Aruge Nebuchadnezzar in Eretz Yisrael, but we found them, we located the corpses, and we buried them, and therefore there's no chash for Tumas Tahom, because they were Mefana the Harugim, and they specified certain places, cemeteries, where they buried them. Is Hachinami, who could say the same thing about Meisei Mabul, that Havu, that the Mabul indeed killed people, many people in Eretz Yisrael, Paninu, but they were able to bury them in Makomos Yiduim, in certain specified areas. And therefore, Rabbi Yeshua says, we're not going to be Choshesh, and there's no Suffik Tumah. Again, it's a little bit strange. I'm not sure who actually was Mefana the Mese Mabul, who took care of that. Where was the Chevra Kaddish at that time? But Reish Lakish implies a kash on himself. He says, Ve'i Ipanu. Well, wait a second. My old thesis was, with regard to our Mishnah here in Zvachim, about the Paraduma, that the Chutzlum Komo here was... Chutzligita was a place that wasn't checked for Tumah Vitara. If now we're saying that everyone, all the dead bodies were, they were mafana them, they collected them and they buried them, and here we're turning to Kuf Yud Gimel Amid Beis, how could it be that Eretz Yisrael has a Makom Shein of Baduk HaIfne Ipane, meaning that they were mafana all the bodies? And Reish Lakish answers, Nehidi Ipane Mirushalayim Mikul Eretz Yisrael Lo Ipane. They were only successful in burying the corpses in Yerushalayim. So Yerushalayim is Enochinami is clean of Tumas Tahom. But as far as the balance of Eretz Yisrael, they weren't Mefana. Now, if Reish Lakish is Moda that they were Mefana the Mason of Yerushalayim, then what was his kasha on Omer Aleph against Rabbi Yochanan from Chatzeres Shahayu B'Yushalayim B'Nuyos, that they were built up in a place that would avoid any possible Tumas Kever Tahom? According to Reish Lakish, there was no need for that. They were Mefana in Yerushalayim the Meisei Mabul. That's a bit strange. In any event, now the Gemara offers a different version of this dialogue, in which it was Reish Lakish who quoted the Braisa as a raya against Rabbi Yochanan, who claimed that there was no Yeridus Mabul Beretz Yisrael. Ika Diamri Esvei Reish Lakish Rabbi Yochanan. They wanted to make a gzera on Tumas Yerushalayim because they found the bones of a corpse in the Dir HaEitzim, and Rabbi Yeshua got up on his feet and he says, we're not going to make a gzera of Tuma now at this point, because they never made a gzer of Tuma for all the other chashas of Tuma. Aye Mesei Mabul, Aye Mesei Nebuchadnezzar. It would really seem that there were Mesei Mabul in Yerushalayim and Eretz Yisrael. My love, says Reish Lakish, from this equation, this analogy between Mesei Mabul and Mesei Nebuchadnezzar, Midahani Havu, apparently there were Mesei Nebuchadnezzar. That's not a question. That was never doubted. Is Hani Nami Havu, there were also Mesei Mabul in Eretz Yisrael. And on both of them, Rabbi Yeshua said, where did we ever find historically that we made a gzera of a Sofei Tuma in Eretz Yisrael? So Rabbi Yochanan answers Reish Lakish by saying, Midi Iria. Midi Iria means, is that really a proof? Hakidi Isav Hakidi Isav. Rabbi Yeshua, was asking two different questions. Each one should be taken separately. With regard to Mesei Nebuchadnezzar, he's asking, where are they? Because those that were in Eretz Yisrael were collected and were buried. With regard to Mesei Mabul, he was asking a much more fundamental question. Heichan Havi means there were no Mesei Mabul in Eretz Yisrael. The Mabul never fell down in Eretz Yisrael. And now we're going to learn a kasha of Reish Lakish against Rabbi Yochanan from the simple pshat in the pasuk at the beginning of Sefer Breishis describing the Mabul. The pasuk in Breishis says, Kol asher nishmas ruach chayim be'apov, mikol asher b'charova mesu. Any person that was in the abasha, on the dry land, died. It says Kol Asher B'Charova Mesu, and Charova implies even in Eretz Yisrael. Bishleim Elididi, says Reish Lakish, the pasuk makes sense. The Amrinon Yorad Mabul Eretz Yisrael Mishum Hachi Mesu. Everyone died in the Charova, all over the world, including in Eretz Yisrael, because the Mabul fell in Eretz Yisrael. Didach, according to you, Rabbi Yochanan, Shelo Yorad Mabul Eretz Yisrael is on my Mesu. Why did the people in Eretz Yisrael die? And here Rabbi Yochanan throws a curveball. And he says, you know why they died in Eretz Yisrael? Not because of the Mabul, but Mishum Havla. Because of the heat that spread throughout the entire globe as a result of the Mabul. And it even affected, impacted Eretz Yisrael. So although the Mabul didn't fall down in Eretz Yisrael, it only fell in Chutzlaretz, but nevertheless, at the time of the Yeridas HaMabul in Chutzlaretz, the heat impacted the entire world, including Eretz Yisrael. Ukid Rav Chizda. The Yom Rav Chizda we find with regard to the punishment of the Mabul, Rav Chizda made a statement, Beroschim Kilkelu, Beroschim Nidonu. That there was a measure for a measure in the punishment, just like there were Mekalkel, that their sin was Beroschim, which means Beshichlas Zora, because they were guilty of various sins of immorality, is Beroschim Nidono. They were judged and punished by the May Mabul through Roschim, through heat. So the water was very, very hot, and that heat spread even to Eretz Yisrael, where there was no Yeridas HaMabul. And how does Rav Chizda derive this conclusion? Because Dichsiv Hochet says with regard to the end of the Yemei HaMabul, this is in Breishis Ches, it says, Vayashoku HaMayim, and he's going to make a kind of a Gzeres Shava to Achashverosh in Esther Perek Zayin, where it says, Ksiv Hosom V'chamas HaMel Shachacha, the same word Shachacha. Now we're going to derive that the word Vayishoku or Vayishoku is a lashon of cooling off, that the water was very hot and it cooled off. That's at the end of the Mabul. So it comes out that even according to Rabbi Yochanan, the people in Eretz Yisrael die, if not as a result of the direct Mabul coming down from Shamayim, but as a result of the heat. And if that be the case, then one might ask, why aren't we choshesh in Eretz Yisrael for Tumas Tahom? Where are the dead bodies? So you're going to have to say, Rabbi Yochanan has no choice but to assume that the dead bodies were buried in Batei Kvaros, in specific cemeteries. Then why is that different than those who died, according to Reish Lakish, through the Mei HaMabul? And the answer is going to have to be that when the Mei HaMabul came down as something very heavy, the corpses were pushed down below the surface of the ground. And that's called Tumas Tahom. There was no possibility of collecting the corpses and burying them. Rabbi Yochanan has in effect deflected this kash of Reish Lakish from the Pasuk by saying that Enochinami, the people in Eretz Yisrael, the bodies, they died, as Rav Chizda says, they died Beroschim, not Bemei HaMabul, but there's no reason based on the death of the people in the aftermath of the Mabul, or shall we say as a splinter effect, a boomerang of the Mabul, that the status of Eretz Yisrael should be, the Cheskes Tara of Eretz Yisrael should be in question, such that we require Bedika, because those that died were buried. Reish Lakish is worried about the status of Eretz Yisrael that requires Bedikah of Tuma because of Tumas Tahom, because those that died, according to Reish Lakish, through the Mabul were buried deep below the earth. Now, we had a Gemara earlier, if you haven't forgotten, where Reish Lakish had a kasha on Rabbi Yochanan from Meisei Mabul and Meisei Nebuchadnezzar. Now, it comes out like this. According to Rabbi Yochanan, that shouldn't be a kash at all, because Rabbi Yochanan now admits that Meisei Mabul, although they didn't die in Eretz Yisrael directly because of the Mabul that struck, but they died as a result of the heat. And if that be the case, they were buried. So why did Rabbi Yochanan have any problem deflecting the original kasha from Meisei Mabul and Meisei Nebuchadnezzar? Why did he say Hakadisa, that Meisei Mabul, that Meisei Nebuchadnezzar existed, but Meisei Mabul didn't exist? He just sort of said that although I agree that there were Meisei Mabul, but they were buried. That's a bit strange. Now, Ika Diyamar, we have a different girsa, that it was Rabbi Yochanan who quoted the Pasuk in Breishis as a raya against Reish Lakish. Ika Diyamri Esve Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. The Pasuk says, Kol Asher Nishmas Ruach Chaim Biapov Mikol Asher Bacharava Mesu. Says Rabbi Yochanan Bishleim Elididi, I can understand this Pasuk. Diyamina, because I claim that Lo Yorad Mabul Yeretz Yisrael Mishum Hachi Avi Charava. That's why the Pasuk says that the Makomos were Charevim, meaning Yevashim, because in Eretz Yisrael there was Charevim because the marble didn't fall down. According to Yoshita Reish Lakish, that the marble fell all over, even in Eretz Yisrael, my Charevim. How is it possible that there are lands, there are areas, ground on the face of the globe, which are dry from the main marble? And Reish Lakish says, you're misinterpreting the Pasuk. The Pasuk doesn't mean that they were Charevim after the marble, but rather they were Charevim Meikara, before the marble. In other words, not that there were Makomos Yevashim at the time of the marble, meaning B'Asiri the Samabel, certainly the entire earth was flooded, but rather the Pasuk has in mind that in all places, even those places that were absolutely Yovesh before the Aretha Samabel, now the marble covered everything on the face of the ground, and the May marble therefore would now inundate all the Charevos, any part that was Charev. So the Gemara asks, am I Korile Charevo? As if you're telling me that the Mayim, according to Reish Lakish, covered the entire earth, why do you call it Charevo? It's not a dry area. And the Gemara answers, the Reish Lakish holds like Rav Chisda. The Omer Rav Chisda, b'dor ha-mabul lo nigzera gzera al dogim shebiyam. Rav Chisda's shita is that the marble, the flood, did not impact on the fish. The fish survived the marble. They weren't affected by the marble. Shenemar, and this you derive from our pasuk that we've been studying here, Mikol Asher Bacharava Mesu, and the diuk is Bacharava, anything that exists, inhabits the ground, the dry area outside the waters, they died Mesu, but Velo Dogim Shabiyam, but the fish in the waters did not die. The Chizkuni in his Perish Al Torah, the Mizrahi as well, answer the question, why was there no Gzera of the marble on the dogim? And the answer is because although all the other animals hishchisu as darkam, the fish were not mashchis darkam. And if you read carefully the pasuk, it says ki hishchis kol basar es darko al ha'aretz. And the al ha'aretz indicates those animals that inhabit the ground as opposed to dogim that inhabit the seas. Fine. Now, according to Rav Chisda, there was no gzera on the dogim shebiyam, and the dogim remained alive. Rav Chisda himself says that beroschim nidonu, which means there's hot water. I mean, if there's hot water, then the fish l'chorah should have died. The Ramban, in his commentary on Breishis, quotes a Medrash Rabbah that the dogim actually ran away, barchu leukainus, to the Atlantic, and there was no yiridas hamabul according to that medrash. But the Ramban himself adds that even if you hold that the dogim remained in that place, lo barchu leukainus, that nevertheless they didn't die, because only the top layer of the waters became roschim, were heated up, but deep down below, the water was cold, and that's where the dogim swam and survived. The Gemara now asks a whole question here, a whole series of questions about a certain creature, a very large creature, which is called in Hebrew the Re'em, or the Re'em Hayam, and in Aramaic it's called the Rema. We're not exactly sure what this creature looks like. So Gemara says, Bishleim lamandi omer shelo yorad mabul yeretz Yisrael, according to Rav Yochanan, we understand, hainu dekom rema hosom, that this creature by the name of Re'em, which is both male and female, in other words, this species has both male and female, they may have survived. They couldn't have gone into the Teva because they were too large. They survived by going to Eretz Yisrael. But Leman Diomar, according to Reish Lakish, who holds Yorah, the marble came down even on Eretz Yisrael, is Reima Hechikom. How could the Re'em have survived the marble? Mimonashak, they couldn't have survived in the teva. It was way too large for the teva, and it couldn't have survived the tremendous waters that came down from Shamayim of the Mabul, which the Torah testifies killed everybody, everything. Amar Rav Yanai, gurio sechniso b'teva. In fact, the young re'ems were brought into the teva. They were small, and they reproduced after the Mabul. And the Gemara is not happy with that. V'omer Rabba bar Barbachana l'didi chazili or zila derema basyoma. I actually saw the little baby, a one-day-old rema, re'em hayam, on David's birth. V'havi kehar tabor. I don't know if this is an exaggeration, a hyperbole. He says it was as large as a mountain called Tabor. And that's a pretty large mountain, a high mountain, because Har Tabor Kamahavya are Boyin Parsi. So now he goes on to impress us, Rabbah. This is the famous Rabbah Barbachana of the Agadatas, the long Agadatas in Bava Basra, which speak about marvelous creatures that we're not familiar with. And Meshachad Tzavre, he says that the skin of the neck of the Ra'im was Tlosa Parse, it was three Parsos. Marba'ata Deresha, that place where the Ra'im laid down its head, was wide enough for Parsa Upagla, for as wide as a Parsa Vachetzi. And the Ra'im was Rama Kava, left its feces, Vischar Yardena, and it clogged up the entire Jordan River, and the waters were not able to flow. So we see clearly from Rabbi Barchana's testimony that even the small Gurei Re'em could not have possibly entered into the Teva. So this would seemingly support the Shita of Rabbi Yochanan, that the Re'em survived in Eretz Yisrael. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Rosho Hichnisu L'Teva. In a sense here, Rabbi Yochanan is coming to the aid of Reish Lakish, and he's telling us that at least the head of the Re'em entered into the Teva, and that would be enough to guarantee the survival of the Re'em. The Gemara is not happy with that either, because V'har Mar Mar, we quoted Rabbah as saying Marbata de Resha Parsu Palga, that the place where the Re'em would lay down its head was a Parsa Vachetzi, and certainly that would not enter into the Teva of Noah. And the Gemara says Ella, but Rabbi Yochanan's intention was to say that Rosh Chotmo Hichnis L'Teva, only the tippy end of its nose went into the Teva, such that it could continue breathing. In other words, we need to get air into the system, into the body of the Re'em. The Gemara now is still surprised here. How could it be that Rabbi Yochanan holds that Noach would take the rush of the Chotem of the Re'em into the Teva? V'omar Rabbi Yochanan lo yored mabul l'yaretz Yisrael. The Gemara feels that we have to just clarify, as we already let the cat out of the bag, the Re'em out of the teva, that Rabbi Yochanan is coming here not to defend himself, but to defend Reish Lakish. The Reish Lakish Kamar, because according to Rabbi Yochanan Lushitasa, there's no need to justify the survival of the Re'em from the Mabul. He was in Eretz Yisrael, but according to Rabbi Reish Lakish, that the Mabul fell in Eretz Yisrael. How did the Re'em survive? Now the Gemara asks another kasha on Reish Lakish. How would the answer of Chotmo, right, Rosh Chotmo shall Re'em help us over here? V'ha kasagya teva. The teva would float on the water, and the waves would sort of bring it up on top of the water so it surfaced. However, when the ark, the teva, would go up and down, also the yarda, as a result of the galim of these waves, how is it possible that the nose of the Re'em would remain in the teva? How did they tie it down into the teva so that it could continue breathing? The Gemara is taking this very seriously. Omer Reish Lakish, karnov koshru b'teva. They actually tied down the horns of the karnayim of the re'im to the teva, so that as the teva went up and down, the nose of the re'im would go up and down. The Gemara asks a kasha now. Ha'omer Rav Chisda anshei dara malbul beroskim kilkul beroskim nidonu. Now we have another question, which would seem to be a question, even according to Rabbi Yochanan. How could the Re'im survive the Mabul? What about the Mayim Roschim? What about the hot waters? And we said that even in Eretz Yisrael, even according to Rabbi Yochanan, the Mesim, the people died in Eretz Yisrael because of the hot water, boiling hot water, even without the water coming down from Shamayim. So the Gemara answers, Ulutameich. And according to your Shita, that the Re'im lo Omad Sham is Mikol Makom, is Teva Hechi Sagya. In other words, the Teva that was, trying to look for the word here, that was smeared or insulated maybe with Zephes, a kind of a tar substance, both on the inside and the outside, is how could the teva float on the top of hot water? The hot water would certainly melt the tar, right? That's the physics here of Zephes, of tar. The Gemara is saying that based on this Mayim Roschim of Rav Chisda, forget about the Kasha that we had for the Re'im, how's the Re'im going to survive? Put that on the back burner, it's part of the problem. We have a more basic problem. How did the Teva survive? Because since it was completely coated and it was insulated by Zephes in the hot water, the Zephes wouldn't have survived. So how would the Ark continue to float on this boiling hot water when the Zephes would completely melt? Vionin, furthermore, Og Melcha Boshan, he couldn't enter into the Teva, and yet the Gemara says in Masech Nida that he was the only person outside the Teva that survived the Mabul. Hechikoi, how could he survive the Mabul? How could he stand in the hot, boiling hot water? Ella, we're going to have to assume, Nes Nasalahem Shinitz Tananu Bitside HaTeva. A miracle took place, and the water on the sides of the Teva, where number one, Og was standing, number two, where the Re'im was located, and number three, where the Zephes was really vulnerable to the melting of the heat, all those waters in that proximity were cooled off, with him miraculously so. So now you want to ask Akasha, according to Reish Lakish, how did the Re'im survive? After all, there was a marble in Eretz Yisrael. And we said, according to Rabbi Yochanan, he survived because there was no marble in Eretz Yisrael. Again, even Rabbi Yochanan has to add another variable into the equation because of the Mayim Roschim. So he has to get the nose of the Re'im outside of danger into the Teva itself. But we're trying to understand the whole phenomenon of the Teva and the Mabul based on Rav Chisda, who says that the waters were boiling hot water. How do we understand the Re'im surviving? How do we understand, right, the body of the Re'im was outside the Teva. How do we understand the survival of Og Melech HaBoshan? He was certainly outside the Teva. As far as the fish are concerned, we try to explain it because the fish were deep down in the water, but and the answer to the Gemara is that there's a miracle that certain waters did not get heated up, they remained cold. And those are the waters where Og stood, where the Re'im stood, and around, directly in the radius around the Teva, such that the Zephes did not melt, the tar didn't melt. So we don't have a question anymore about the survival of the Re'eh. The Gemara asks a different kash now. Ule Reish Lakish Nehi Nami Diyorad Mabul Li Eretz Yisrael V'Holo Posh. In other words, we should assume that as a result of the Mabul, nothing remained alive, nothing survived, because the Mayim came down in such strength that everything horidu hakol bavel. Now, what does this mean? Horidu hakol bavel. The Amar Eish Lakish Lomini Krishma. Why is the name of Bavel called Mitzula in a pasuk in Yeshaya? It says Haomar Latzula Charvi. And the answer is, why is the word Mitzula appropriate for Bavel? Shekol Mesei Mabel. Nitztalalu sham. Nitztalalu means they went down into the Mitzulos, and this is all as a result of the May Mabul. So now let's just reiterate the Gemara's Kasha. The Gemara says that even though the Mabul came down in Eretz Yisrael, nothing would be left of the Mesim, because the waters completely washed away the mason, and everything was dumped in Bavel, as Reish Lakish himself says, that Bavel is called Mitzula because all the mason marble were schlepped along to Bavel, and that's where they were sort of buried below the water level. And Rabbi Yochanan has a different interpretation of the pasuk in Yeshaya, which calls Bavel Mitzula. Lomanikre Shma Bavel Shinar, and that's based on a pasuk in Bereishis, which reads Vatehi Reishis Mamlachto. We're talking about Nimrod Bavel, the Erech, the Ached, the Chalna, the Eretz Shinar. So the country that's called Bavel is also identified by the Torah as Eretz Shinar. Shekol Mesi Mabul Nin Arusham. All the dead bodies from the Mabul were pushed into this land. Comes out that both, according to Reish Lakish, if you ask the question, why, according to Reish Lakish, are we afraid of Tumas Tahom, and the Mishnah that we're dealing with of Paraduma Chutz L'Gita means it was without Bedika, why should there be a Chash, why should we remove the Cheskas Tara of Eretz Yisrael? After all the Mesim were pulled to Bavel, outside of Eretz Yisrael. My answer is the Efshad Lo Idbiku. Some of the Mesim connected or were cohesed with the land of Eretz Yisrael. They got stuck in the tit, and they didn't make it all the way to Bavel. The Gemara now quotes an additional drush about Shinar, the name of Bavel. Omer Rabbi Avo, Lama Nikra Shma Shinar, Shemina Eres Ashireha. In other words, the Ashirim are vomited forth from Shinar. Mina Eres is Lashon Niur, to shake him away. In other words, those rich people had no compassion on poor people, they were rejected. So the Gemara asks, "V'hakol chazina dahavi?" We can testify that there are plenty of rich people in Bavel. Tlosa dori lo mashchi. You won't find three consecutive generations of Ashirim that survive in Bavel. Now the Gemara quotes again the Zolag of Urcha, another statement regarding the Adam of Bavel. Omar Rabbi Ami kol ochel ma'afara shel Bavel ki ilu ochel besar avoso. If he eats the produce of the afar, the dirt of Bavel, the soil of Bavel, then it's as if he's eating the flesh of his forefathers who died there during the Golos, during the Gola. Tanya Nami, this like reflects people who don't want to go back to Germany. Tanya Nami Hachi, we also learned in the Braisa, another statement that would support Rabbi Ami kol ochel me'afar shel bava kiilu ochel b'sar vosav yesh omrim kiilu ochel shkotzin v'remosin, because they died during the mabul and they all rolled down to the offer of Bavel. Now, I'm not sure if this braisa, when it talks about ochel me'ofer shel bavel ka ochel me'psar avosev, is referring to the meise mabul, because otherwise, why is the Gemara quoting it here? Rashi says that the intention here, the meaning of this braisa, is avosev shemesu begola, who died in the chutzlaretz of Bavel. And now we're back to the Mishnah, because we've already discussed and exhausted the topic of Paraduma, and there's no chiyuv kares for shchutei chutz in Paraduma. Let's go on to the next part of the Mishnah of Soyer HaMishtalech. The Mishnah has established that a Soyer HaMishtalech that he brought b'chutz, he was makari b'chutz as potur, based on the Pasuk in Vayikra Yitzayin, the parasha of chutz. It says, Al Pesach ol moi lo hevi'u. And if it's Edo Roy, Lovo Pesach Ol Moi, then there's no Chiv Chutz. The Gemara has a kasha on a Braisa that derives this halacha from a separate limud, Reminu. This Braisa in Torah's Kodem and Parshas Achirmos deals with the case of Shchitas Chulin Bazora, where he's Chayev Kares for taking Chulin into the Azor and Shechted it there, which is the flip side of Shchitas Kodshin Bachutz. And this Bryson Tars Konim quotes a Pasuk that deals with Shchutei Chutz, and it says there, El Pesach Ol Moed Lo Heviu Lahakriv Korban Lashem. The Pasuk is teaching us that only on a Korban that he was Makar Bachutz, he's Chayev, but he's not Chayev on Chulin that he was Makar Bifnim. So the Braisa says, O Karbon, shall we assume that the word Karbon in this Pasuk, Shomea Ani Afilu Kodshe Berek Habayis, would there be a Chiyuv of Shchutei Chutz, even for Kodshe Berek Habayis, Shenikro Karbon, that even Kedushas Berek Habayis is described in Bamidbar as a Karbon, Shenemar. And here we're talking about the Milchemes Midjan at the end of Sefer Bamidbar and the booty that they took from that Milchem. And it says, Vanakrev es Karban Hashem. This is a long pasuk that says, Vanakrev es Karban Hashem ish asher motza chlizov etz ada vitzamid tabas agil vechumaz. All of these have Kedushas Berek Habayis, and yet they're called Karban. Vanakrev es Karban Hashem. So how do we know that your potur for Shchitas Chulin Bifnim, if he shechs Chulin inside the Azor, that this Braisa is pushing for its agenda that Shchitas Chulin Bazora is potur from Karis? And the question is, how do we derive this conclusion? Because if the thrust of the Pasuk is coming to teach you that Yechai for Chutz, even in Kodesh Mizbeach, because they're called Karban, then we don't have a source to Pata Shchitas Chulin Bifnim B'toch HaZorah. And the Braisa answers, Talmud Lomar, the beginning of the Pasuk says, Vel Pesach Ol Moed Lo Hevio, Misha Roy Lov Will Be Ol Moed, and he didn't bring it into the old moed, he's chayim when he shechs the bachutz, yotzu kodshe berek habayis she'enom ru'uyim lovo el old moed. In other words, these are not dedicated to hakrova, and therefore you're not chayim for shchitas chutz. So therefore the word karbon is free, is superfluous, and we can use it for a drosh, for a mute, to be memayit shchitas chulin bifnim, and tell you that you're not chayev in that case. So the Braisa now asks the following question. Shouldn't we say, Otsi es elu she'enom ru'uyim, velo otsi es sarem mishtalech shu roi lovel pesach ol moed? Would it make more sense that the meat of this posuk should exclude kodshei berek habayis, which are never roi l'mizbeach, rather than exclude sarem mishtalech as far as chutz, which is Roy Lovel Pesach Ol Moed? That's, we take it into the Ol Moed, into the Azor, for the purpose of our Grola, We have two Seirim. They look identical. Now we have to determine through this lottery which one is going to be Olel Hashem as a Karbon, which one will be Mishtalech Lazazil. And since this Sara Mishtalech, although at the end of the day it's not going to be brought on the Mizbech, but nevertheless it was Roy, Lovol Pesachol Motamid Lomar, the Pasuk says, Lahakriv Karbon Lashem, Lahotzi Sara Mishtalech Sheino, Miuchad Lashem. Again, exactly what that means, that Sara Mishtalech is not Miuchad Lashem. There's a long Ramban in the Chumash about this, but suffice it for our purpose to say that it's not Miuchad L'Mizbeach. In any event, we see clearly from this Braisa that the Ptur of Shechita Sara Mishtalech Bachutz is derived from Karbon Lashem, and not from the beginning of the Pasuk that says, Vel Pesach Ol Moed Lo Hevio, as the Mishnah had said it. And the Gemara answers, Lo Kasha, there's no Kasha from the Mishnah to the Braiso. Kan Kodem Agrola, Kan Liachar Agrola. The Braiso is addressing the case where he shechted one of two Seirim Bachutz before the Agrola. And therefore, he's going to be Chayav for Chutz because it's Omed Lavas Ol Moed. And if we only had the Pasuk Vel Pesach Ol Moed Lo Hevio, since Lasid Lavo, is we, you know, L'shem Agrola, we're going to bring it to the Pesach Ol Moed. Therefore, we would assume that Yechai Fachutz. That's why we need a special Ptur that exempts you from Karis that's derived from Karbon Lashem. However, Khan, here in our Mishnah, we're talking about a case of Shchitas Soya Mishtalech Pachutz Li'achar Agrola. And in this case, the Ptur can be derived from El Oel Moed Lo Avio. Because after Agrol, it's not Roy Lava Li'ol Moed. So the Gemara says, Achar Agrol Nami, even if the Sar Mishtalech was Shechted Bachutz after Agrola, and now you're telling me that it's not V'el Moed Lo Avio, then therefore it's excluded from the Chiyuv of Chutz. Ha'ika Vidui, we still need to bring the Sar Mishtalech into the Azara, so the Kohen Gadol could be Misvada Avonis Kol Yisrael Al Rosho Shel Soyer. So how can you therefore use the Paschal Pesach Al Moed Lo Hevio to exclude it, to exclude Sar Mishtalech Elo Amar Avmani? How do we reconcile the steer between the Mishnah and the Braisa? Lo Kasha Kan Kodem Vidui V'Kan Li'achar Vidui. We just have to fine tune it. We have to say that in the Braisa we're talking before Vidui, and therefore it's Roy Lovo Li'ol Moed for the purpose of Vidui, and therefore we need another Biyut to exclude Sara Mishtalef based on the Pasuk Karbon Lashem and Sara Mishtalef Einu Miyuchad Lashem. But Kan, here in our Mishnah, we're talking Li'achar Vidui. And therefore, if it's Li'achar Vidui, it's not Omed La'avos Ol Moed. And therefore, the miyud of El Pesach Ol Moed Lo Hevio is appropriate Li'achar Vidui. Why? Because after Vidui, we've already fulfilled anything and everything that has to be done with the Sar Mishtalech. We're not going to no longer bring it El Pesach Ol Moed. And therefore, the Mishnah is going to use this pasuk El Pesach Ol Moed to exclude Soya Mishtalech from Shchutei Chutz. Okay, Rabbi Osei, we're going to stop here. The Mishnah now that we're going to analyze lists an entire enumeration of Psule Karbonos, where there's no Chiyuv Chutz, starting with Roveh and Nirveh and going on. So if you want to make a note of it, we're up to the last line on Kuf Yud Gimel Amid Amid Base.